The Lowdown Chronicles. Meet your maker.
Well, hello, podcast aficionados. Welcome to a new episode of Lowdown Magazine's very own program, The Lowdown Chronicles, Meet Your Maker. A new series that puts the well-deserved spotlight on people that essentially help to shape the ever-evolving pop cultural universe as we know it. In true Lowdown fashion, the illustrious circle of international guests won't be put together from one specific spectrum only, but is assembled from the many tesseras the bigger picture is manufactured from, which means contemporary art, skateboarding, music, fashion, film, graphic design, illustration, you get the picture, and obviously everything in between. My name is Sven Fortmann, aka 40, and I'm not only the editor-in-chief of this fine publication named Lowdown, I'm today's host as well. And with me today is celebrated artist Stefan Marx.
Hey Sven.
Welcome. You know, Stefan, he isn't only known for his work in the fields of skateboarding and lettering and typefaces and clubland and ceramics and fashion, but he's also known for having more than just a soft spot for basically all things aeronautics as well.
That's true.
Very nice. And yeah, to start with, obviously, like we're both going way back. Like we featured you a couple of times in the magazine, and we know each other through, I don't know, like through trade show business and whatnot, and through different gallery things. And I think if I remember it correctly, then actually like both of us, like we're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year, you know, like with Lowdown Magazine and as well like with Lousy Living, basically, right?
Actually, that's true. I mean, the year founding Lousy Living, I really can't recall like very exactly, but when I talk about it, I always say 1994, 1995, something like this.
Right.
When I did my very first hand-painted t-shirt.
Yeah.
It was very much fun, yeah.
Like, do you remember the graphics or the motifs?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I remember it quite well, and I also have these original t-shirts still in my archive.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And
that's smart, actually.
Yeah, my t-shirt archive, which is at my parents' home, it's very well stored, I think.
Okay.
And also, like, there were a few years, maybe the last 5 years, I didn't take so much care anymore on my t-shirt archive. So, like, all the t-shirts I did, I didn't put like very clean in a kind of storage bag or something.
Yeah.
So I wore them like also like today, and they became my favorite t-shirts, and or like I gave them to us to friends and stuff. So I think I'm not so happy about it. My parents probably are happy about it. And yeah, I mean, t-shirts, I'm still in love with t-shirts.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I can imagine that it's kind of hard, like when someone is as long in this kind of business as you are, like to keep the enthusiasm as intact as it was, let's say, like 20 years ago. But would you say that the t-shirt still basically presents like a perfect platform for delivering pop cultural ideas?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there's like, for me, in my very personal subjective view, it's still the best thing. And I still have maybe only two shirts, like very kind of button-down shirts. Mm-hmm. Or is it button-up? I don't even know. I don't even wear these things. Like, I only wear it like when I'm like people invite me to their wedding, or like I have to go to serious things. But yeah, really, I don't wear these shirts. I only wear t-shirts every day.
Mm. The same here, basically.
I mean, not today.
Not today, yeah. But because, you know, we're on camera, so obviously.
Shit, yeah. Me too. Yeah.
And would you say like that you know, like when you started back then, obviously, like, you know, like being already informed, like through skateboarding culture, and like everyone was basically like getting their influences from the US, right? You know, like through street art, through skateboarding culture and stuff. And would you say that all of a sudden having guys around like a Medic, for example, or Spoon, which then later turned into Hessenmob, that they basically worked as an eye-opener to see like that the same shit is possible over here in Germany as well?
Oh my God, absolutely. And Spoon is like one of the very early key figures for me, like aka Christian Roth.
Exactly.
And I mean, Grischi. And I'm so happy to have him as one of my personal starting points as well, because the history or like the story of Lousy Livin' is a very, very, I mean, very kind of German one as well. I mean, I grew the story is for all the listeners. The story is that I grew up on the German countryside, in a very small village with 600 inhabitants, maybe back then maybe 500. Mm. It's growing. It's cool. And so I'm born 1979, and everything I got there from the American skate. I mean, I was obsessed with skateboard culture in the village, and there was a skateboard Monster skateboard magazine, of course, and I had like maybe two friends who were also informed, and I was like, I mean, with Lousy Livin', it came. The initial idea was actually that my very less pocket money. I didn't want to spend it for like for expensive U.S. industry T-shirts anymore back then, because there were two reasons. First, as I grew up on the countryside, the T-shirts were just not really accessible for me. Like I had to go to a I had to call like a mail order,
right?
Mostly Gary skate shop.
And
in
that
Wiesbaden.
Was the pre-internet times, basically, right?
It was absolutely pre-internet. Yeah. It was like you know, landline.
Yeah.
And so I had like two dealers, basically. It was like one, the Gary skate shop in Wiesbaden, which had kind of always like advertisements in the Monster Skateboard magazine. And also, I think maybe like American Sports in Hamburg, who had like a funny copy catalog.
Yeah.
And so I kind of ordered these catalogs and they came, and then I saved up for a T-shirt. And when you called them, they were like, yeah, of course, this T-shirt is not available anymore. Or like, this skateboard is not available anymore.
Yeah.
We made this catalog a half a year ago. Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Which also turned out in many dramas back then when I wanted to... I mean, I was so in love, for example, with the very first, I think, Frankie Hill pro model on Paul Peralta with a bulldog skateboard graphic. And to this time, I mean, I saw it in Propaganda, Paul Peralta number 7 video. And then I wanted also to skate it. And when I saved up the money and came to the point to order it finally by phone at the called Gary skate shop. And then they were like, oh no, this is sold out, but Frankie Hill has another pro model out now. We can just ship you this one. And on the phone as a kid, you are like, well, I saved up like 3 months for this board. Yeah, I take it. Like,
that's
without seeing it,
right?
without seeing the shape, without seeing the graphic, like buying totally like the cat in the box. So I don't know how you describe it. And well, so the same was with T-shirts. And then at some point, I had the idea, or like I made like drawings back then. I was very interested in record covers and of course skateboard graphics and all kind of a field of image which interested me. And also like, I mean, there was a Documenta, like the big art show in Kassel, which was like the
Kassel isn't too far away from your town.
No, it's
right?
Not that far away. But this was like the first bigger city. It also had like a kind of a skate shop. There was like a skate part of a very public sport, like a sport sport shop, basically. So I saw some stuff there as well, and also like the stickers and stuff. But anyway, I was totally in my own land, countryside bubble. Like I had a skateboard monster magazine. I had my two friends. and nobody else, basically. and also like the video stuff, but this came a little bit later then as well. And I was so into, yeah, then at some point I was like, no, this is just too expensive. And the second part is all my non-skateboarding friends, they don't understand the graphic. They don't understand the vocabulary. They don't understand what blind is.
Yeah, but that was the beauty of it, right?
That was the beauty of it. But I had like so minor skateboard friends who found this cool that it really, like the whole vocabulary, it was like you couldn't even kind of show off or something like this. they were like, what's this? They were like, and then I was like, well, why not putting my own drawings on t-shirts, which are maybe also in like my other friends, my non-skate friends understand it. They understand my language. They understand also my topics, which I'm interested in right now. Like we all listen to the same music. So maybe I can transform like my drawings into something like a small group. A small group understands and maybe also wants to have it.
Yeah.
So I bought like some textile color and had an airbrush by then as well. And so I produced the first t-shirt. It was not silk screen or something. It was like, I tried to do the same graphic like 5 times with kind of stencils and stuff. And then I've kind of like hot ironed it and asked my mom to help me with this kind of stuff.
But basically, like this implies what you just told me, like that you were already like fairly confident about your drawing skills and.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think drawing you don't do something wrong with it. You can be, it's easy to be confident in it. I mean, when your friends like it, that was the best already. Like, and I think my friends were really supporting me. And they were like, hey, of course, we give you 10 Deutschmark for this. Then you have the cost of 8. And you, I don't know, like I was selling those to my friends or like just giving away basically. And then this was one part. But then I had one friend in class and he was the cousin of Christian Roth. Right.
Yeah.
So he came to school every then and when with the new copy scene of Spoon.
Uh-huh.
And he made like, he collected orders in our school for the newest range of Spoon and was selling it more or less as a salesman in our school. And he always told me like, yeah, it's my cousin.
Little dealer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was like the coolest thing. Mm. I mean, the Spoon t-shirts were like, wow. Like, and then I was like, wow, the quality. This guy definitely doesn't isn't painting with airbrush colors on t-shirts. Yeah. It's like heavy silk screen, like very textile silk screen, super good quality. And I was like blown away by this. And then I wrote him a letter. I just wrote Grishy a letter like, hey, look, I know your cousin. I totally love like your world of Spoon. And like, can I ask you where you produce these t-shirts? And then I don't recall 100%, but I think we had like a little bit of letter contact, or maybe I called him also, landline style. And then he recommended a silk screen printer in Gießen, where Grishy was based. He's still based there.
Yeah, true.
And at this point, then I decided, like I called the silk screener and kind of made got like a estimate on like how much it is like to print like one design with two colors and this and this size and stuff. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is also over my pocket money, like, but then my older sister got her first job, and of course my family always supported, but somehow I asked my sister was like, yeah, I kind of lend you 500 Deutschmark.
It's very noble of her.
Absolutely. I mean, she's just like, there was no interest in on it, but and she was like, yeah, here, you I just have my first income, and I give you this money and you give it back when you can.
Mm.
And so I printed my first two designs with this six screen printer in Gießen. Mm-hmm. And they came and I was over the moon with it. Absolutely. And then I sold, then I had to, okay, now I have to sell these and now I have to get the money back.
Like, yeah.
I can't just give them as presents to my friends, which I also did, but of course, like then I went to Kassel to like there was like this also this graffiti and skate shop then, and they kind of took some. I went to when I visited a friend in Hamburg. I went to the I actually went to Richie Loeffler's shop and out of the, I mean, I wouldn't do this these days anymore. But I just showed up and said, "Hey, Richie, I have this little hey Richie, I have this little label. Like, do you want to have some for your shop?"
Yeah.
And he was cool enough to say, "Like, yeah, of course, give me some." And he paid me in cash, and I was like, "Wow." I mean,
but that's basically like how like a couple of brands started back then, right?
Absolutely. But I like thinking back, it was very naive, and I mean, I'm not a city kid. I'm like totally like a countryside, like Landei, right? So it's absolutely, I don't know. I'm very thankful for everything, like and all the supporters who supported my work back then and still do. And that's how Lousy Living Company started. Yeah. I always wanted to have a company, so I said Lousy Living Company.
Makes sense. But that's, you know, what you just told us, you know, like basically like growing up on the countryside and stuff. I think there's this misconception about you that I think a lot of people actually believe that you're from Hamburg. Because you spent like really lots of years there, and there's the connection with Klepto. And
exactly. Yeah, I mean, exactly. And that's what I kind of not like when people say, "Oh, you are like an artist from Hamburg," or like, because I don't like anyway to connect anyone to any place. But I studied in Hamburg, and I spent quite a long time over there, and I still love it. It's great.
Yeah.
When I moved there, like I think I spent 2 years to do my civil service in Cologne, and then I eventually moved to Hamburg, and then of course that was another story. In Hamburg, there were like so many small brands already, and I was so many also like graphic influenced, like very awesome, like from graffiti culture, skateboard, graphic design, like also like Lowdown always played a big role in my in the 90s. This is also like very funny, and Thomas maybe has it somewhere. I wrote also a letter with my first drawings. I wrote like Thomas a letter, and I was like, "Hey, look, I love your magazine." And also it was a little bit because I had to go to, I mean, in Totenhausen, you never could buy, it was not possible to buy a Lowdown magazine. It was like only in Kassel or in Marburg. In Marburg, right. I had to visit very regularly because I had to go to the doctor there. I had like a chronical ear thing, I had to go to hospital a few times over in Marburg. And so when I always went to Marburg, I looked, when is the new Lowdown at the Bahnhofs, at the main station, basically available. And also when I had to be in hospital for my mom, always like bought me like, and so it was very influential. And so at some point, I think I just wrote a letter but very like, very naive, and just say thank you, Thomas, for this magazine. And look,
it's so nice of you.
I also made some drawings. Maybe you want to see them, like, but really not like thinking about like getting published with them. And
we should totally check if Thomas has this kind of stored somewhere, because like this actually would be like the perfect flyer for advertising this podcast.
Absolutely. And Akiko knew about it. We talked about it. Yeah. I think they have it somewhere. Okay. Maybe at home. Yeah.
Perfect. And then when during the years you spent in Hamburg, and obviously besides doing, you know, Lousy from there and doing Klepto and studying and stuff, I think the first time outside of, let's say, like streetwear or textile business, you entered my space, so to speak, because I was like DJing a lot back then, was obviously like through Smallville, where you did like all the CI and all the cover artwork. And
exactly. Yeah.
And I was obviously like back then, like we didn't knew each other like that well. And I was fairly confused because I would never ever have connected you to Clubland, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, record covers were a big influential thing for me as well back then, in the, like when I was in the 90s basically. And then when I moved to Hamburg, and that's the beauty of Hamburg, everything is quite close to each other, like to each, like every scene basically. So you have like probably the Golden Poodle Club where where like skaters go, like people, musicians go, like artists go. So you, it's a very small scene. And
There seems to be a lot more interaction in between the scenes than, let's say, like it was at the same time in Berlin, for example.
Yeah, maybe. And like, I mean, Hamburg opened like a very new horizon for me regarding music and club culture, of course, and everything around it. And I think, the story is, I wanted to make, of course, a record cover. I was also like, wow, record covers, like awesome, like vinyl record covers. And then like one label approached me. They were like, oh, Stefan, can you do a CD cover for us maybe? And I was like, no. And I think it was probably one of the first time I said no to something. I was like, shit, I'm too young to do record covers. Like nobody's doing it. It was like the major CD times back then. Like every record store was closing. I mean, it was like already like in 2002 or something. And then I kind of realized, okay, maybe I'm too young for doing record covers, because there will be no records anymore, like no vinyl anymore. This is also totally naive. I mean,
also super modest of.
And very stupid. But then I got to know my friend Stella Plasonia, Peter Kersten, and Julio Steinhoff. Mm-hmm. And these three friends of mine had the idea to found a new place in Hamburg called Smallville. It started as a store to make like to kind of establish like a place to meet, to share, to be a host to people who visit Hamburg. Exactly, right. And they missed this kind of thing in Hamburg, so they decided to establish it by themselves. And Peter Kersten, who's very well known under his producer name Lawrence and his label Dial Music, which he's running together with David Lieske, still in 2020, of course, as Smallville is also present. So they said, okay, like they established Smallville Records. It was in St. Pauli, and it started as a store, but also the plan was to release records. And but this was, and then they asked me to make like the store typography and also the flyers for the first parties, because also that was not the first time I did my first record cover. The first record cover I did for Isolé, for Reiko Müller on Playhouse Records.
Yeah.
And Reiko Müller.
It's more like the Frankfurt posse, right?
It was more the Frankfurt posse, but Reiko was living in Hamburg, or still lives in Hamburg, and he knew my t-shirts. Mm. And he was like approaching me once, and he was like, Stefan, I'm working on my new, and it was also like this very small scene basically. And he was like, Stefan, I'm working on my new record, and this will come out on Playhouse Music, and I'm about to release it since 3 years, and everyone is kind of like, I'm pushing and pushing and pushing it a bit. And I like especially this t-shirt, and can you do the record cover? I put you in touch with Ata Macias, who was running Playhouse Records back then, and he's the art director, and it would be a gatefold cover, and it would be like worldwide, like it's long awaited record of mine, like after this hit record he had, and in 2000 or 1999. So I did this. I worked on this record cover. I kind of visited Frankfurt, got to know Ata Macias, and who I became friends with since then, Yeah, and that was my first record cover. And we released we made a small release party at Smallville, basically.
All right.
I was like, wow, I was like also so happy about this record. And then we started Smallville Records, or they started. I mean, yeah. I wasn't in the paper, so they started, like, Stella, Pete, and Julius started Smallville Records, and since then I regularly did the record covers.
That's perfect.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, that's basically like every artist's dream, you know, like to be there from the beginning and have the chance to build this identity from scratch, right?
Exactly, and it was not a master plan to build an identity, because they said also like, oh, this is such a niche music, there's monetary, but there's no real money in this, so mm-hmm. We don't need to use the record covers at an advertisement for the actual music. So we don't need to be screaming on the record covers. You can just show a drawing. And I was like, yeah, okay. We just put the infos on the back. We put a drawing on the front. I see it also more as an art edition, mm-hmm. or like I kind of just see it as a space for my art, basically. And we never wrote the musician's name or like the on it. Like it was, and then we save some printing costs. We just do a one color print, like one C print, and then we go for it. And I think, I don't know when I think now we are like in Smallville catalog number 55 or something like this. So, and like we have published already over 10 long players since then.
And I think like through your work for Smallville, it was the first time I actually ever saw a drawing of yours, which was not monochromatic, but like with colors.
Exactly. Yeah. We released the first record, long player, was with Benjamin Brunn and Mufti. Mm-hmm. And then we decided to take, I made a lot of watercolor drawings back then. And it was super colorful. Like it was absolutely opposite from a black and white drawing. And
exactly. Yeah.
And then, we used this as a cover, and I mean, I think it was a quite successful record, like because it was just amazing music, and
But like having all these super nice experiences in Hamburg, you know, like with Smallville, like with the Klepto guys, like finishing studying there, and these kind of things. What made you then decide to move to Berlin?
I mean, the super nice Klepto and Smallville times were like already 15 years ago.
Yeah, right? Of course, I know. But, I mean, you moved to Berlin like 2 years ago, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and this has nothing to do with any of those, because I'm, of course, with Lousy Living, and I'm in Smallville. Everything is still existing. Kleptomaniacs, very successful, and then Story with Lousy Living and Smallville and Dial. And I mean, I just needed a little bit of a change, I think. It's okay. I think it's more about the city instead of the things which are going on in the city. Okay. Like, I think, yeah, I think 20 years or like almost 20 years of Hamburg is also enough. I think I don't want to spend another 20 years in Hamburg.
But I know that you're a major fan, for example, like you spent quite some time in New York, you spent like quite some time in Tokyo. And I thought like if someone would have told me like that, oh no, Stefan is leaving Hamburg, it would have been my first guess, like, yeah, probably like, no, he's going, doing Tokyo for good.
Oh yeah. I mean, of course I always thought about these things also with New York, and I mean, Tokyo, not really actually, because of many reasons, mm-hmm. but, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think New York is my favorite destination mm-hmm. Since a long time. Also because my friend Mark Nardelli, who runs Five Borough Skateboards, he is always hosting me, and the New York Art Book Fair who's organized by Printed Matter, which is like the epicenter of artist books and since ever, basically. And so I always spend like. Yeah, try to spend a lot of some weeks there in September during the fair, and of course once I think it was 2013 or something, I won a grant for young arts in Hamburg, and I I got some, I got some money through the year, and I think I spent everything in New York. I spent like a long time in New York, and oh, of course, then you think, maybe I move here, stuff like this. But then also you speak to, I don't know, I just never really did it because I was like, I think I kind of enjoyed like it is, like spending a bit every year, like mm-hmm. spending a few weeks there and getting the best out of it. And but I also, like, of course, when you kind of think about this, you see how awesome like these places in Germany are, like how great like the city structures and like Europe is, basically. Mm-hmm. Like all these kind of things come together, like family, friends, also the life quality, like the monetary part of it, and like the cultural part of it. And I think like really moving to the US was like never really on the table. Maybe like for a few years, but yeah, but that's too crazy.
I mean, like obviously, like as you mentioned it, you know, like the on a price scale, like obviously, like it's just insane when you compare what you have to spend making at least like something which feels like a half decent life in New York.
Exactly.
Compared to basically the very same here in Berlin, for example.
Exactly. Like, and all these kind of thoughts go. And also I have my company here, like in Germany, and like I have my galleries.
And speaking of the galleries you just mentioned, do you remember, or can you really put a finger on it, about the moment or the time like where you actually made this transition from being, I'm exaggerating obviously, like being the t-shirt guy, so to speak, to all of a sudden like being recognized as an artist through galleries.
Yeah.
Was it something you always like confidently worked towards to, or was it just like,
no,
like a happy
not,
accident?
No,
or?
Not really. I don't even know if it's a happy accident. It's just an accident. And that's also a thing in Hamburg, because you have like these off spaces mm-hmm. where when you do something, you get your chance to show some work. Or whatever it is. And these places are great. And I think it's awesome for every city to have these places where people just show their creative things. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to say art or something. And then there are like this little bit above the off space small galleries mm-hmm. who are people who make a living out of selling pieces to people. And we have in Hamburg, there's a great place like this, and the name of the place is Feinkunst Krüger. Mm-hmm. It's run by Ralf Krüger, who gave me the chance to show my work the first time as a kind of solo show in 2007. Mm-hmm. And these places also kind of are in between, like, so...
I'm sorry to interrupt. Like, is Feinkunst Krüger still around?
It is, yeah, it is.
Because I remember, like, I always loved it. Like, for every show, like, you get little package sent by them, like with postcards, you know, like from the artist, and
exactly.
I loved it.
Yeah, he's absolutely amazing, and he's doing such a good work. Also, like to fill the field of like a young person who has a creative outlet. Let's say like is painting or drawing, doing some art somehow. He has a space, so he has some small white space. So he has a wall. We have some guests. We have a party. We have an opening party. There's a price list, so you have to decide what's. I get 50%, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, now I have to make a price up for this drawing. And normally I give it away to friends, but there's like no money, like right. And you kind of learn like very slowly about it, and this is great. And he kind of guides you. And so I had two shows. At Ralf Krüger, and it was absolutely awesome, because then also like people, of course, in these places are also visited by the gallery scene and by the art scene in Hamburg, mm-hmm. but also by the music scene and by. So this is also like a place where many many things come together, and these two shows I did with Ralf were quite successful, and. Like Pete, like Lawrence was like playing at the openings, mm-hmm. and like like a very established artist came by and bought some work, and everyone was like, oh, wow, this established artist is coming by and buying some work of him, of this kid, Stefan. And then after these two shows, the gallerist Karin Günther, who runs like, I think, one of the best galleries in Hamburg, came by, and she liked my work, wanted to visit me in the studio. And it was kind of a very classic gallerist approach, the young artist kind of scene. And she is absolutely great, like how she kind of, and then she offered me like a show, like she was like, okay, Stefan, let's try, should we work together? I really like your work. I like your approach to drawing and to painting. And I like your world, basically. I like your fanzines and I like your artist books. And I don't care if you make your living with designing t-shirts and skateboards. Mm. I think it's great. And this is also like, I always had a doubt, of course, like how, of course, the fine art world, they don't like people who do like these kind of things, right? And this is still, I mean, it's the 21st century, and these kind of things are still in a young artist's head. This is actually
it shouldn't be like this.
And there are so many great examples, but of course you are not so very often you are not confident in it, and you need these few supporters, and you get a lot of hate, you get a lot of like kind of arrogant eye up kind of whatever this is, and that's also okay, I think. And but Karin, yeah, she offered me like the first show, and we had it in, I think, in 2010 or like 2009. I showed my work the first time in a solo presentation at Galerie Karin Günther. And then of course, like, many people were like, oh wow, Karin Günther is showing Stefan Marx, what's going on? And and then 1 year later, I also had a solo presentation at the Kunstverein Hamburg, who was directed by Florian Weitvogel, who's now the director of the Contemporary and Modern Department at the Ferdinand Diom, the Landesmuseum Innsbruck.
Okay.
And so I was at the Kunstverein then, and then also like one of my other top five persons in Hamburg, like gallerist Jürgen Becker. He's like, I mean, he worked with Sigmar Polke back then and Richard Prince, and he's like, also like he also took care of me, and I mean, he kind of put me in like in some group shows, and so somehow I was then in this kind of in this gallery world, basically, which I discovered also step by step, and in a very kind of with the help of Karin and Jürgen and Florian. And so
was it hard for you to decode at first, or
absolutely. I mean, absolutely, because I really looked at everything very carefully, and I mean, when somebody approaches you and says, like, okay, Stefan, we put you in this group show, and but the show before was like works of Richard Prince, or like in his office are like Sigmar Polke and like kind of all these Lawrence Wiener and all these great artists you really admire. There's a lot of things going on, basically, and then you always get these questions and this kind of you get a lot of hate as well, or like a lot of feedback in different directions, which is also great, I think. And then you have like all these other things going on, like music wise, like then Peter Kersten, like, or like you, like with Dial Music, for example, they put like all these awesome artists on their cover as well, and so you learn, basically, and I'm still learning.
But after the experiences you did like within the gallery world, like in Hamburg, like how did you end up with Rutkowski 68?
I started to
because like they're having you basically exclusively, right?
No, I mean, I still work with Karin Günther in Hamburg.
I didn't know them.
Yeah, and also with Ute Pardun in Düsseldorf. But with Nils, that's also like another story, which is one also of my favorites. Like, I think Nils, I also got to know through another friend of us, Jan Arendt. And
one of the good guys,
one of the fun guys, yeah. And, from Cologne. And so Nils started a gallery space in Cologne in the, I think in 2011 or 2012, I can't even recall. And he always wanted to, then he approached me and was like, hey, Stefan, I really like your work and maybe we can start working together. And I looked at it and I kind of visited it and kind of took it a bit easy. I was like, yeah, let's maybe think about it or like get to know each other. And we became friends. And then he opened up this new space like next to his very first gallery space. And I did my first solo back then. And I think it was 2014. And this was quite a success as well. And then we started working together on different fields, also like with the Mixed Pickle show, or like I became the gallery artist, and Nils absolutely transformed his idea of his very own idea of a gallery in Cologne and in the German and European market, basically, also like doing art fairs and also learning a lot and getting a lot of great artists in the gallery. And he opened up, I think he approached it. He has also like a very young way of communicating art.
That is true.
And artwork and artists and like the ideas behind all the arts. And I appreciate this a lot and I kind of love to work with him. Mm.
And what I like about what I admire so much about your art is like that basically, it feels as if it for some strange reason speaks to so many people at the very same time, but in different languages, so to speak, even though like you're looking at the very same picture, that it feels like it's almost like a paradox. Like it feels like super inclusive, even though like it's super personal as well.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Sven. And I think, I mean, in my personal opinion, it is successful. I don't know how other people think about it or something like this. And I don't care much as well, because that's what I also learned. Like, and I think with the arts, it is such a great thing. Or like drawing itself is like so personal and so great. And I think it's one of my favorite things to do. And I'm absolutely happy doing it. And I think now nobody can take this away from me. Mm-hmm. And this is always what kind of stays. And I think if somebody wants to show these works or wants to buy these works or wants to do whatever with these works, I'm also, that's kind of the second step of it. But like, it's still, the most important part is still doing it. Or like, it's still like having the, just drawing is the most important part, or like painting. And then
like to a cathartic degree almost, or
yeah, exactly.
that really needs to get out of your system.
Exactly. But then you have to take care of like what's happening with this kind of piece afterwards. And that's what I was talking about. Like then to work with the gallerists and like doing artist books and showing your work at the New York Art Book Fair to like a crazy audience, basically, like from the 14-year-old kid who has like $10 to spend to, for example, David Senior, who was the director of the artist book collections of the MoMA in New York. And he came always by and said, Stefan, what's new? I get this, like I get all the new stuff, and you write the invoice when you are back in Hamburg, you write the invoice to the MoMA. So, or like other, like, right, you have like the whole span. And that's what I love in America as well. And that's not so much European. It's very like,
unfortunately not. Yeah,
exactly. Like, so you have everything, and that's the great thing about the New York art scene, basically. Mm. But yeah, my work is for everyone. I mean, that's absolutely true. And if it speaks to you, I'm very happy, and I hope to open a conversation or like to give something. I don't personally maybe don't even, I mean, I get so many feedbacks on works from people. They tell me their stories, seeing this work, looking through this book, seeing this record cover. And I mean, the record covers is even special because you always have the music to it as well.
Yeah.
And maybe you had the greatest party where you met new people or like had this and this experience. And then you connect the music plus my work to this moment with all these emotions.
Mm.
And yeah, I mean, and then my work is somehow very personal. I mean, I have people who are like, yeah, I wear this t-shirt of you and I met my further wife. Or like, I mean, I have all these very crazy personal stories from friends, or like people became friends then as well, just approaching me. And I mean, these days through Instagram, it's also very interesting what kind of stories you get like daily in your direct message box. And I'm very happy to read this, and try to answer, and I'm trying to ask as well and to recognize it. But sometimes it has like nothing to do with my work. It's just like the work is the subject or something like this. It's very interesting and I love it.
I think it's remarkable that, you know, that was, it's basically referring to what I said like earlier, like that. I think it's absolutely astonishing because, you know, like your style is like, it's a very distinctive one. You know, it's very easy to recognize. You can put like 100 paintings like on this wall and you can easily go like, this probably is from Stefan Marx. I'm 100% sure. And even though the very majority of it is offering like a monochromatic world, and the majority still plays around like, you know, with typefaces and these kind of things. And I love it that, you know, like the emotional response is such a massive one. You know, like basically like to something which isn't offering this kind of like emotional platform, so to speak, in the first place.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so diverse as well.
Maybe it comes down to that it's just offering something really beautiful and diverse, and it makes the world more culturally rich.
Yeah, and also like that's what I love when doing artist books, because you don't have like the very unique original piece, and I love to have the original pieces, but I love to do artist books because of many reasons. One of those is to have like an edition of it. You kind of make it very accessible for a very low price, and you spread it worldwide. So you send a box to Japan, to Utrecht bookstore, for example, in Tokyo. You send a box to Printed Matter in New York, and you maybe sell some on Instagram or like, I don't know. So like the traveling speed of books is kind of slow, but I get so much feedback also on books I maybe made with my publisher, Benjamin Sommerhalder of Nieves Books from in Zurich. Like I made maybe 2007 or like 2008, and they like, wow, I just discovered this book and this is so beautiful. And can I ask, like, I don't know, like, you know, like I get like feedback of work or like books I made like 12 years ago. And sometimes I don't even remember like this special drawing I put in there or something.
Yeah.
And therefore I absolutely love books, and also encourage always young artists to make art or like to kind of think in the medium of a book or like of a, yeah. I mean, I don't need to tell you this. The magazine is the same.
It is in a way, yeah.
It is even, yeah, it's even like has even many more kind of layers, basically.
But when you, for example, I know like you're also lecturing like at universities, for example. Are you lecturing about these things that you just mentioned? You know, like basically not explaining something in an elaborate way, but that it narrow it down, that it comes to, you know, like trust your instincts, trust your the emotional side of yours?
Yeah, exactly. I try to. I mean, it always depends which questions are in the room. Like last semester, I had a guest professorship at the HFG in Offenbach. Mm-hmm. And I had so many great, talented young students to talk with, like over one semester, and they gave me a lot of inspiration as well. Like they showed me like stuff how they work basically, and like what they are interested in. I always tell, like when I'm lecturing or like when I'm having like a conversation, I always say, okay, I'm also here to learn. Like I want to know your favorite music, mm-hmm. your favorite artists, and then I tell you what my favorite artists are or like my favorite music, and I show you how you maybe what you have look at or like what kind of practice is maybe good for you or like what kind of medium or something like this. So it's very diverse as mm-hmm. well. Yeah, of course I try to be very honest, and I try to give them like a very transparent view out of my experience, of my kind of 20 years experience.
Right. Like if I remember correctly, like you entered this world of lecturing at universities like through Eike, right? Through Eike König, or?
Yeah, I mean,
Eike. Because like he is from this area, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, Eike, and I'm very thankful for that, he kind of invited me for the after school club once in Frankfurt. And now also like the HFG Offenbach, mm-hmm. I get this guest professor thing also through him, or like he kind of connected me again. But kind of this lecturing came also earlier. And I think the very first lecture I did was right after my studies, I think in 2007 or 2008. And I was like so nervous about it. And it was like, I never did this before. And I kind of put like a presentation together, and I was crazy nervous during this talk. Mm. And it was in Essen at the Volkwang Schule. Yeah. They invited me. There was like kind of they made it a small festival. And since then I kind of get invited quite regularly to make like lectures or like I had a lot of some drawing classes in different mm-hmm. universities, like in Karlsruhe, also in Bauhaus University in Weimar.
Yeah,
I teached, and also in Hannover or like in Hamburg, and now in Offenbach, and it's quite fun.
Busy.
It's also like I do this because I want to learn from, like I try to get something from, like I want to take something away there as well, and not only to kind of teach my kind of, and not doing a blah blah, and that's it.
Again, like such a cool way to look at this. I doubt that like a lot of artists like who are doing similar things are doing this with the very same approach.
Yeah, I think if you don't, I don't know, actually. I have no idea. I always talk to the students, not really to the other teachers.
And obviously, since this year like offered some new realities for all of us, so obviously this also had an impact on your schedule, which basically became a lot different than what it looked like earlier this year. But still, you somehow managed to do this wonderful big mural at Kunsthalle Düsseldorf.
Yeah, that was awesome. And this year,
what was it? I woke up on a sofa 3 weeks later, right?
A few weeks later.
A few weeks, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a quote by Odessa Moshfegh. She wrote a book. She's a New York author, uh-huh. And she wrote a book, which is great, and I can recommend it. It's called My Year of Rest and Relaxation. Mm-hmm. And I kind of turned this quote a little, I kind of changed it a bit, I think, but she kind of wrote it. And Gregor Janssen and Alicia Holthusen, they invited me to show my work in one wall in the foyer of mm-hmm. the Kunsthalle Düsseldorf. And yeah, we timed it quite, yeah, it was also a lucky thing to time it on after the summer break, like to the beginning of September, where I had a gallery show at Ute Pardun planned, and so we were like, okay, we make this work at the foyer at the Düsseldorf Kunsthalle, And yeah, I painted this black and white work, and it's still on till the beginning of February. Mm-hmm. And if this podcast is out till then, I recommend everyone to visit this mural. Also, if it's, yeah, it was awesome.
It looks amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't aware like about the connection. I know that you. How does it work basically? Like when it comes to all the many different things you're citing, like, you know, it doesn't matter if it's like a lyric from a Dinosaur Jr. song or like from a book or whatever. Do you have this kind of sketchbook, which is what, thousands of them? Or?
Yeah, I had quite a lot of them, and it's coming very natural, I think. Like I hear these songs, or like I read these books, and then I always think, like, when I have a sentence, like, oh, this can be a nice painting, but maybe I have to change a few letters, or I have to change a bit, and I do a little bit of breaks, or I kind of do a little bit of continuation. I take this, put this, like, I kind of work on it. And it also depends on the size, of course, of the, normally I work, I always start to make like works in a small scale, like some ink paintings and then or ink drawings. And then I kind of see, like with the Düsseldorfer Kunsthalle, the format was quite special as well because it was very landscape.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of different from piece to piece, but I definitely have my strategy basically for my own, like to kind of go and see this can be a successful way to make a painting, or maybe it's nothing I show like to somebody. I just put it in the drawer. I have many of those.
Can you imagine? Yeah. So this was happening like in late summer, and then obviously like this lecturing things, like they continued, obviously not being there in person, but you know, like we are like video conferences and these kind of things. And there also is like a new monograph of yours, right, on Hartje Kanz.
Exactly, and this is one of my other highlights this year.
Oh, really, is it?
It's absolutely, because in my publishing, my list of publications, like this one is definitely like the thickest and like the most long awaited from my side. It's the first thing actually, which is like with the, it's kind of like you have like, it's really like an art, it's between an art book and an artist.
It's simply called Typefaces, right?
It's called Schriftbilder.
Yeah.
/ Type Works.
Type Works, yeah.
Yeah. And I worked with Michael Satter on it. He's a great graphic designer and even greater friend of mine, based in Frankfurt and Berlin. And Hartje Kanz. And Hartje Kanz, I mean, has a great history of book publishing. And my friend Nicola von Felsen, she became the director of Hartje Kanz. And she, I worked with her since a bit, and she was always like, Stefan, I want to make a book like about your type drawings, or like your type works, basically. And I was like, oh, Nicola, I don't know. I kind of prefer to work on my own copy machine, or work with Benjamin Sommerhalder of Nivus to make like kind of books very, in a very own way, basically. But of course, I also love like very, like thick kind of chronicle thing, like where you can really read when it was produced, and like we have maybe some smart text from art historians or like curators. And she wanted to do it, and she approached me 2 years ago, I think, about this, and then we worked on it, and I think the result, I'm very, very happy with the result. There are like three texts. One is by Britta Peters, who is the director of Urbane Künste Ruhr, who I also made these big murals in the Ruhrgebiet, in the German Ruhr area. One is by Florian Waldvogel, who I mentioned earlier already. He's now working in Innsbruck, and he's a very great friend and a big supporter of my work, and also like gives me a good kind of advice. And the third text is by Nicola von Felsen herself. And I mean, have a look at the book and tell me what you think.
This book, is it like a werk show, so to speak, or is there like lots of stuff which you exclusively produced for this publication? Or
no, I produced nothing for this publication. Okay. It's just showing the work I did in the last two decades on type base, basically.
Right.
So I went deep down in all my archive, as also together with Nicola and Michael. And and this is more like, it feels a bit like an artist book. So we have like it's like 240 pages. So it goes, it's mostly black and white. We have a color part in the middle. And it's not chronological organized, but it's more like a feeling, which I always try to gain also in my artist books. And but you have also this very, like a German and English, like we have an English translation for the text, and it's very kind of, it feels very art book-like, basically.
So I can imagine, you know, like since it isn't in any kind of chronological order, that getting the right flow, like, was it the toughest task? Was it like a year plus almost? Or
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It took us a while, and I also let go a bit, like that. And that's the beauty of it as well. Like my artists, my scenes and my books, I always do 100% by myself. Mm-hmm. But I always with this book, I kind of let go, and Michael Satter, he put a lot in through his eyes, like he put a lot of this kind of flow, basically. And of course we always chatted about it, and I had my vetoes, and I said yes, no, blah blah blah, but it's a lot of his perspective on my work in this book as well, which I love.
And like all the little magazines you still publish, like by yourself or together with Nevis, or And I know, like you have more than just like a tiny soft spot for this kind of matter. How do you see it, like in times of Instagram, so to speak, like where lots of artists use this platform as a daily sketch exercise, basically? How important for you is it, like to still be there in a kind of like physical format?
Oh, it's very important, and I think it's getting even, I think the quality of an artist book even rises in these days, because
it's, you think so or you hope so?
Personally, I think so. Because as I mentioned earlier, like the travel speed of it is like so slow, and it's always on, like it's just so amazing. I mean Instagram, it became very fast and also very awesome. I have to admit, I love it. But I think it has not so much to do with the practice I do in my artist books, and or like you with the magazine and stuff. It's a way of publishing. But I think like the physical thing, and also like in the last self-made scenes I made, I also kind of collaged in. Like I kind of cut and paste a bit around, and every kind of issue, like every kind of scene is also like a handmade collage, basically. And I try to add, or like sometimes I draw in as well. And like every kind of, like let's say like you make 80, like an edition of 80, and each of them is like a little bit different as well. And
So that's beautiful. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I think That's the beauty of it, and I love to continue this.
Yeah. So, as we figured out like a little earlier in this conversation, like that this year definitely was something really special for all of us, and especially like for the ones like who are working in creative fields, I guess. At this point, like next year isn't looking too rosy as well in terms of, you know, like I predict like there aren't any major changes, so there will be more lockdowns and more craziness all over the place. How do you already know like that this will affect your goals, which you already had, like in one way or another? Or is there maybe even something very positive like to get out of it, because you know, like, no, I know the new parameters, so I focus on this.
Yeah, Sven, I think there are so many levels of it, like in so many layers, and in general, all the stuff, or like all the travels I wanted to do this year, like I had a show planned in Tokyo, there wasn't, I wanted to go in March, then there was the Tokyo Art Book Fair in November, I wanted to go, so I had two times Japan on my list, New York, of course, for the September New York Art Book Fair, and LA for the LA Art Book Fair, and some other travelings, and some other travels are planned, and so... And that was, and everybody knows about it. Everyone was like, okay, maybe do it next year then. So it's postponed. But okay, next year is looking like it looks right now. And I think now I'm just going with it. I try to stay very positive and kind of encourage my friends and artist colleagues and also galleries with my very personal perspective on it. But next year there's something nice coming up. Like in November 2021, I'm working on a show with the Kunsthalle Hamburg. Mm-hmm. And there will be a big major show about old masters, the Dutch old masters.
All right.
And the curator and director of the old masters, Sandra Pizot, she's putting a show together with the Dutch old masters. And my work, and also of the work of Lars Eidinger.
All right.
This will be like a big museum thing in November 2021. And I'm working for this thing. And then, I mean, there are some things coming up, and we try to make it happen somehow. And I'm sure things get canceled.
Yeah.
Things get like also, but also like I think publishing is also a big part of this kind of practice to get to you. Yeah, I mean, you as an artist, you are almost. I mean, sometimes very often in the studio, you have like your very personal lockdown, and you just work.
That's very true, sir. Yeah.
And somehow you don't have FOMO so much, like you don't miss out on many things. And many friends of mine take it quite. I mean, positive is the wrong word, but I think people very. Quickly adapt to it, and also we at Lousy Living, we have our very own practice now with it, and I think, yeah, let's see what 2021 brings. But I absolutely hope that I can fly and see some other places. And
that's the thing. Like, I'm a bit scared, like that, you know, like with this year and possibly like the next year, 2021, that your aeronautics fetish, you know, like will be a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
look, today...
Unsatisfied, so to speak.
Today, our all-time favorite airport in Berlin, I have to say, my favorite airport is Frankfurt, is closing.
Yeah.
My deep love for aviation and drawing planes, I think I never drew less planes than in 2020, because I actually, like, I only... draw them when I see them.
Yeah.
So, of course, I hadn't this much airport and airtime this year. But I mean, let's see. And I made a scene about, it's called Tegel or like TXL, and I also wanted to work with Dashwood Books, like this great publisher and bookstore in New York, run by David Straddle. I wanted to publish a new series of my plane drawings as a book, and we make it happen at some point. I'm just worried about my most favorite airline, Lufthansa, these days. But
Oh, come on! Like they're getting pampered big time. So
yeah, but doesn't really help these days.
Yeah, true. But you know, like how much did they get at this point? Like 6 billion?
Yeah, even more.
I think.
Yeah, even more.
Yeah, right, maybe.
Yeah, but they have to pay it back at some point. And then, let's see. But, I mean, let's I don't know, let's go. I think I'm very positive. It will be better at some point.
I hope you're right, man. Stefan, so thank you so much for having taken your time for joining this little conversation with us here.
Thank you so much, Sven. I really enjoyed it here at the Lowdown office. And it's so great to be surrounded by all the magazines and the creative output and
from printed the last cave almost,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I remember my first visit here and it was pretty impressive. It's still impressive.
Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Pleasure it was. Till then, Stefan. Bye.
Bye.